I was thinking lately about authenticity and how some storytellers have not done their research, they haven't done their due diligence in order to accurately depict the profession or the culture, and how that can create misunderstandings. I remember my grandmother saying, well, my great grandmother saying, it's an idiot tube, talking about the TV. And I thought that was ridiculous. I was like, obviously, I know this is not real. It doesn't make me dumber. But as I got older, I realized that it does. It may, not me. And it seems to make other people dumber. Like, critical thinking skills have been kind of like pushed to the wayside, and people have just become consumers and regurgitators of what they see and hear through a device without a lot of insight put behind the things they say before they say it. So basically, I'm saying Hollywood, TV shows, they have made it so that mediumship seems to be a certain way. And it's created a lot of fear and a lot of prejudice against those who believe in it. So, communication and communion with the deceased is about in every single religion, just about. And spiritualism is predicated on the ability to demonstrate life after death by what's called evidential mediumship. And I thought a lot about the horror movies, the thrillers, the mysteries that are out there, and how they make it one way. That's often very inaccurate. They make it really scary, really spooky. There's always some evil demon that's trying to control and possess. And I understand that we need some type of antagonist. But when I was writing Ghostly Ghoul Family, I wanted it to be more genuine. And I kept getting feedback from people saying, make it more horror. There weren't any nuns in my story when I started it. And this was back in 2010 when I first got the vision for the story. And this was around the time I was being taught mediumship. And I was dating a Cree man, and I kept seeing a trail of child spirits following him. And I asked them, who are you? And they started telling me their story, that they had died in a residential school. They kept saying Scarcy, and I actually Googled that only this year and found out that there actually was a tribe called Scarcy. I was like, what? I don't know why I never Googled it before, but I remember there was one child spirit that was like a girl. And at the time, I was considering if I wanted to be with him or not. And the only reason I was going to be with him is if I was going to have a child with him. And I remember he was sleeping because we were tented outside, and I saw this child spirit, and I asked her, are you my daughter? And I heard very clearly, no, I'm his. And I realized I'm not going to end up with him. I'm not really supposed to. And I knew that his first child was going to be a girl. So we broke up. And I'm happy about that. There was a lot of other stuff. Basically, if I feel like someone would be a great father, I will essentially work through a lot of stuff for the sake of bringing into the world some beings that have chosen that person, so to speak. So some of us believe that we choose our parents or that we're conscious before we're born. That can sound out there to some people, but basically that's one of my beliefs. And so I've always said in meditation, if you choose this person to be your father, I will go above and beyond to make sure it works. So when I heard that this girl spirit was not my daughter, it kind of released me from pursuing anything with him. And I only Googled him in 2019 when I was starting to write the story and I wanted his feedback, and I found out that he had like a 6-year-old daughter. And I was like, knew it. I knew it. And I remember I also heard he's going to co-create the same situation as his mom. He's going to only be with a woman who has a child with another man already. He said her brokenness will make him feel right. Like this person coming through from a hard life, trying to be a responsible mom, having like cracks and breaks, and he was going to kind of like step in as the savior. And that's exactly what happened as well. Like, I don't know all the intimate details, but the person that he married had a, like a 11-year-old, I think, an older child, and he helped her to raise her, and then he had a child with this other woman. And I was like, thank God I never ended up with him, because his life is boring. And that was another thing I heard in meditation. I was walking down the street, and they're like, okay, it's time to make a decision. And when I say they, I mean, like, I consider it like my higher self, my soul. And so my soul was like, you need to make a decision. This is what your life would be like if you were to be with him. And I saw that outcome, and the overwhelming feeling I got was boredom. And then they said, and then there's this other opportunity. And they were like, it's a lot harder. They're like, it's very safe with him. They said, but you'll learn more and your stories will be deeper and connect with more people if you actually have these types of experiences and write about it. So I chose the more challenging path, and I'm really happy I did. But it's little things like that. And there's other stuff that I got in meditation that turned out to be true in reference to him. He just was not the right fit. But it's things like that that really confirmed to me that I am accurately picking up on situations and the future outcomes. So anyway, when I was writing the story of Ghostly Gold Family and it follows a medium, I wanted it to be very truthful to my experience, but then it's very subtle with mediumship. It's not like all of a sudden, the being is right in front of you, you know? It's like, you know how you look at a light and then you look away and there's still a little bit of that brightness? It's kind of like that, where you see something but you know it's not really there in a physical sense. And you might not understand all of the words that you're getting. You might not hear them clearly. So I like the idea of making it a bit of a mystery to figure out what was going on. And the story played out in front of my eyes. Like, I didn't get all of the information, but I knew it was about First Nations children that had died, but more specifically been murdered at a residential school, not by adults, but by a bad seed. Like, I'm trying to find the right word, because it's not a narcissist, psychopath, sociopath, basically someone who really enjoyed hurting kids. And it was a white male, and he was trying to get the medium to go into the basement where there was less oxygen and hide with them, or to have the medium hide with them in the basement cellar. And it was painted or presented first as if there was a land keeper who was out to get the kids, and they were hiding from the land keeper. And so the medium was hiding in the basement, and she started to suffocate and die because he wanted to marry her and make her like the new mother for the kids on the other side. And there were other flashes here and there, and I didn't remember it all perfectly, but I remember the drive to the residential school in the visions of the story, and how they were like talking and recording, and how The residential school was dilapidated. There was a woman who greeted them, though, in the original vision I got, and I changed that later on because it just didn't work for me. And like how they were setting up, and she would look to the side and see the spirit world come to life in front of her eyes. And I just really liked the story. I remember there was three people at the start. It was the boyfriend of the medium and then two other people that were setting things up. Elise was never in the original. But anyway, when I sat down to write out the whole story, because again, I was meditating and I hadn't seen these child spirits in a while, but they said, now is the time, write our story, write our story, write our story. And it became this obsessiveness where I could not think, I could not do anything else but write the story. I wasn't like motivated, like, oh, I should write the story. It just was this, it now is the time, do it, do it, do it. And I am surprised that I wrote so much in such a short period of time while still writing BTW, I'm an Alien. And I got caught up in trying to appease the horror community and the horror genre, because I hate watching horror and it's not scary. But my original vision for the story was for it to be grounded horror, like what actually truly happened, that being horrific enough. But then when I kept getting feedback, I kept getting these ideas about putting some nuns in. So I did. I would be fine not having any nuns in it. Like, it could just be the coyote, the groundskeeper, and Lorcan. But there was a lot of desire for misdirect when I was writing it out. And when I think of the story right now, it feels too moot, or muted, rather, when the nuns aren't there. But one of the complaints I received was that there's too many horror movies about nuns. So I thought about making one a nun and one a brother of the Catholic Church. It just didn't really work. I'm open to things shifting and changing, but my main point, the reason I started doing this recording, was I felt like the authenticity of the mediumship was not coming through as clearly as I wanted. And unfortunately, mediumship has a very bad rap because there's been so many charlatans and so many people who really are taking advantage of other people who have really good intentions but still not really doing what they claim. And some people believe that not a single medium that's ever existed or will exist can actually do what they claim to do. But I've just had too many experiences where it's exact names of people who know nothing about me. But really what convinced me was my ability to do it myself, because I knew the stories of people like, oh, they're Googling you, they're going on Facebook, oh, the cold reading of like seeing what you look like, how you respond to certain things they say. And then I let that go and I said, okay, if I know myself and I know my integrity and I know I'm not Googling people, I know I'm not just reading their body language. If I'm in a room in the dark with my eyes closed before the person even arrives and I'm getting all this information and then relaying it to them, like three kids died in a car accident, or one of the worst readings I ever did was about a girl who was on her bike. I don't even want to say it. She was hit by a car by two male drivers. And when they got out of the car and saw that she was dying, instead of calling 911 and getting her some help, they raped her dying body and left her to die. And she did. Disgusting. And I had gotten all that information before the person ever confirmed. Like, no one wants to pick up on that type of situation. The person was not in front of me. They were just on the phone. And this is what came through, and I shared it with them, and they said, that's exactly what happened. So then I know, beyond a shadow of my doubt, that mediumship is real. But the thing is, if you are performing mediumship in the sense of a scripted show, it'll still make people think, oh, well, when we see it live, that it's really just people playing and acting just like in that TV show. So I'm in this weird conundrum where I want to paint mediumship accurately, but then I'm feeling like the desire to paint it at all on the screen will always cause scoffing at the profession, because people will keep associating it in their mind to someone just acting, someone just pretending, and just reciting a script. And I had promised myself that I was not going to do that to mediumship. And this is one of the reasons I feel like I am not truly embracing the script just yet, because I'm afraid of making it harder than it already is for legit mediums in the world. And there's been popular mediums who turned out to be frauds. There's a lot about Thomas John, nowadays, and how some skeptics prove that he is someone who researched the people, or he would just recite things that someone had confirmed in a previous reading in public demonstrations. And I don't know Thomas John. I don't know all the reasons why people do what they do. I don't know if he's partly real and partly fake, but I know that that really messed up the profession. People like Teresa Caputo also get a horrible rap, in the community because of a lot of different things. Mediums are very critical of other mediums. Everyone thinks they know what's best, what's right, what's good, what's not. And it becomes a very judgmental experience even within ourselves. So maybe I should just highlight that. I just got the answer to my own question. Instead of worrying about presenting it as perfectly as possible and not making people believe that it can be scripted, I should just highlight how charlatans do it, the fears mediums have, and maybe expose a little bit of the infighting in the community. Because I feel like that gives it credibility when you see that other people have the same thoughts, feelings, and you do, as you do, but they still believe in it because of X, Y, and Z. So sometimes I think I just need to hear myself speak. That's what this podcast is for, to help me like work through some things. So I never really wanted to mention that my main source of income is being a medium and giving readings, just because I'm tired. I've done it for over 14 years, and it becomes this weird harassment where people are always asking me to read for them. No matter what I do, they always reach out to me for something I can do for them, not just to be friends. And I recently had that experience again with a woman who I've told multiple times to stop asking me spiritual questions. And she messaged me out of the blue a spiritual question. I said, I'm not available to answer spiritual questions. And she said, it's not a spiritual question. I was like, what? How do you energetically connect to somebody that you're talking to and trying to teach mediumship? That's not a spiritual question. I was like, don't do that. So it's kept a lot of distance between me and some of the people I know, because then they're referring me to their friends, to their family, and I am done with that. I'm done with people trying to be friends with me in order to monopolize my time for what I can do for them spiritually. And I'm not nourished in return. I have a few people in my life who are like that right now. Vanessa, Octavia, Dominique. There's been a few friends who I'm not sure if I want to keep in my life anymore. Jesse and Robin and Sharon. It's become a weird competitive type of thing and harassment over like stupid things. And but that's the thing. Friendships ebb and flow. So I'm just in a place right now where I need it to be equal. I need it to be reciprocal. Not competitive, no drama, no judgment, no power trip where I'm right, you're wrong, I'm doing better than you, and like, no. Or even like unsolicited advice. That's what gets me. Where people think I need their opinions to help me get where I want to be in life. Because I find it very insulting to my intelligence. There are certain things that are my triggers, and that is the main one. Anyway, I don't want this to be too long of me just commiserating with my my conscious mind and my subconscious. But I think vulnerability is an important topic. I think just about everyone struggles with it with their art and then making it for the public because you are kind of asked and pressured to change it, but you do have to stay true to you no matter what. And I feel like we've been robbed of brilliant art because the artist was like, no, I'm not changing it. And the industry squashed it. So I feel like we need to change that so that brilliance can really shine. Because I'm bored. There's nothing to really watch. So I'm hoping that the industry will change where there's less gatekeepers on what is a yay and a nay. And just whatever that quality content is that's birthed in that person's heart, their mind, it gets to be vomited onto the page and shine in all its splendor. Vomit might be too harsh of a word, but you know what I mean. All right, that's it for now.